Bit of magic.
A bit of magic?
It's easy. Let's see.
Hello and welcome to Disney Magic Hour, episode number 36. On this week's show, we go to the Disney Movie Hour, and we are featuring the adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad. To my left is, well, not as always, I guess so, on this show, as always, is Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
Across from me is Brian. Say hello, Brian.
Hello, Brian.
And via Skype is Ryan P. Wilson of the Main Street Gazette. Say hello, Ryan.
Hello, Ryan.
Hello, Pete. And say hello, Pogo. Was What I Likes by Pogo. You can find that video and more over at youtube.com/Pogo. His music at soundcloud.com/Pogo Mix, and his website is pogomix.net. We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter for this show at Diz Magic Hour Pod. And on Facebook, if you search for Disney Magic Hour, you'll find our little group. Add yourself to the group. We shall approve you as long as you have a friend, because that is always a red flag. And if you have the time and the love, head on over to iTunes and do a 5-star review. Hit that subscribe button. And I don't punch Brian or slap Brian on this show anymore, but I can still insult him. So
we have two.
Good. You are useless.
Okay.
And I don't like you.
Okay.
All right. So got that out of the way. Yep. So let's talk about our guest, Ryan P. Wilson, or Ryan Wilson. I'm always used to hearing you referred to as Ryan P. Wilson. Of the Main Street Gazette was nice enough to come with us on this show and talk about this film. Thank you so much for joining us this week, man.
No, it's good to be here. Yeah, I throw the P in because Ryan Wilson's fairly common, just to give it a little something.
No, that's actually a good idea. I never even thought of it that way. That's actually like why no one refers to me, used to never refer to me as Pete, because there were a couple of Petes.
Oh, yeah.
So everyone called me by my last name. So how are you, man? I know we wanted to have you on last week for Song of the South, and it just time schedules and whatnot didn't work out. So you got Ichabod and Mr. Toad. I mean, is this a particular film that you dig?
Yeah, it is. It's one of those things that you kind of get in pieces, though. Like, you know, unless you have the actual Ichabod and Mr. Toad, you get Mr. Toad, you get Wind in the Willow. Around Halloween, you always see the Sleepy Hollow bit. And so it kind of has those both pieces, but yeah, it's one of those things that's kind of a weird piece to put together, but I love it.
Yeah, the only reason that we had it was because a couple of times ago on Turner Classic, they showed this as the feature as it was intended. So we just had it sitting on the DVR by dumb luck. Outside of that, we would have probably had to go, you know, via buying it or just finding it on the net in pieces.
I rented it on iTunes in whole. The whole thing is on iTunes.
Oh, that's not too
bad.
Yeah,
sorry, there's $3.99, so that's how I watch it.
That's not bad at all.
Yeah, it wasn't bad at all.
We were actually, after we watched it, we were considering maybe picking it up, but we'll get to that later. So let's talk a little bit about the movie. It debuted back in October 1949, and it was another one of these package films. I mean, Ryan, this was basically the last package film before they go on to the next feature, which is Cinderella. Were you a fan of these package films? Do you think like this was the right time to basically finally call the curtain on these? Or were you a fan of a lot of these?
I like them because you get a bunch of different pieces together. But I think it was the right time to say, all right, we've done this enough. You know, they wanted to get through World War II. They were just trying to find ways to keep the studio afloat when they were doing all of the different pieces for the military, and so these shorts were the way to keep it going. And so I think it was a well-timed venture to get these out there. But I think as we're coming to, you know, the 50s, you know, the war's behind us, let's start moving back into full feature length.
And the 50s really cranks it up. I mean, when we go through the 50s, it's just title after title of like, oh, this is a real classic. This is a real classic. Where in the 40s, it was kind of, and I mean, obviously you have some amazing classics, but you have other ones that are just, they seem like placeholders, I guess is a bad way of putting it, but an accurate way of putting it.
No, I think you're right. It's keeping the Disney name out there, and there may be a piece of it that we look at now and say, yeah, it's a classic piece. The rest of it we could probably do without, or it lives in the annals of Disney archive history, trivia knowledge, those kind of pieces. You know, this is one of those ones where I think both pieces stand the test of time, so it was a great high note to hit as you're walking out the door.
Yeah, no, that's very true. I also feel like, you know, the pieces you were saying, like the Reluctant Dragon, had a couple of really great pieces, yeah. But as a whole, it was weird. So yeah, I do think that, you know, now that war's over, everything's done, we can kind of stay on track with one movie. Let's do it.
Yeah, I would say this in Caballeros worked the best.
Yeah.
Yeah,
As much as I enjoyed Reluctant Dragon, these were the two that I felt worked best.
Yeah, they're the most cohesive.
And actually, Ryan, you were saying, you know, this was of course, you know, getting themselves out of the World War II, you know, sludge that everyone was stuck in, you know, people yeah. gone overseas and whatnot. And actually, one of the directors for this film, Jack Kenny, he was the director for the Donald short, To Führer's Face, that wound up winning the Oscar. So I thought that was pretty interesting that he, you know, he got such kind of a notoriety on such a specific, you know, short. And then he did have also a part in Three Caballeros and Make Mine Music. So this was kind of his thing, was working on these, you know, what was it? Package pieces?
Yeah, the package.
Yeah, package films.
Yeah, and you get a little bit more freedom to make basically a short film is what they are. You're not exactly doing a 7-minute clip, but you're not doing a full, you know, hour and a half of things. So you can, yeah, you get that kind of stuff. And with the World War II, I mean, you even end up with, whether it's true or not is, you know, no one can say, but you have that story where there's an animator on this film who was working on Wind in the Willows, who apparently went away to war, came back and picked up right where he left off when he got back, because all of these pieces were so long in production.
Yeah, it started in 1941, and then they had to put it on hold, and then it didn't pick up again until, I believe, 45.
And they wound up cutting – they basically wanted to do Wind in the Willows as a feature.
Yeah.
And then they wound up cutting scenes. Mm-hmm. And funny enough, for the portion of Ichabod, they wanted to try to make that a feature, but they couldn't stretch it into a feature length.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can even see that with what we had. There are certain points you're like, why do we add this piece in?
Yeah. Actually, you know, I'm looking forward to talking about Ichabod because I'll you know, as I've said many times before – on other ones that we've gone over, I didn't remember 90% of this.
No, I only remember the end.
I really didn't. Yeah, I remember the end because I remember as a kid going, did he die? You know, because I just wasn't paying that much attention, evidently. But another director who was on this film was Clyde Geronimi. He went on to do so much from here basically through the 50s. He was directing on Cinderella, Alice in Wonderland, Peter Pan, Lady and the Tramp, Sleeping Beauty, and 101 Dalmatians. But my favorite fact about this man is, after he left Disney, he worked on the 1967 Spider-Man cartoon that was, I mean, had to be fueled by so much cocaine. But it is just, it's that Spider-Man cartoon that you always see the internet memes of and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
That was his work.
Oh, wow.
That he worked on that as a director.
He did all the Marvel. He was like Captain America, Hulk, like even Submariner. Like he was doing all the Marvel cartoons at that time. That was like where he wanted to live.
That's so nuts, but that's so cool because he did so many for Disney. And then I'm really curious, was he just like, okay, I've done what I'm going to do here. Now I want to try something totally different. And went into, you know, superheroes.
Yeah, I
don't know.
And it's funny now because Marvel's part of Disney.
Yeah, it's true, actually. He wound,
It all comes full circle.
And, of course, there was a third director on this film, James Algar, who did Fantasia. And later, he did many of the True Life Adventure, the live-action documentaries that Walt Disney put out, which I really kind of love. And I'm happy that they're going back to that a lot more. Because I think it just feels very Disney.
Oh, definitely.
Those kind of things.
Yeah,
like, that feels right.
Exactly, yeah, it feels Disney.
So, you want to jump into Wind in the Willows? You guys want to do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so Wind in the Willows. How does one describe this little short?
Well, I like the opening. Let's talk a little bit about the opening.
Go ahead.
Because you start off in a library, and it's narrated
Basil Rathbone.
Yeah, by Basil. How do you say his last name?
Rathbone,
okay. Who was Sherlock Holmes, pretty much. That was his...
Yeah, and then he would later be the inspiration for the character in Great Mouse Detective.
Right.
So...
He's one of the big names behind this film. So his first segment is talking about all the, you know, famous English or, you know, British literary characters. And he lists a few, but he has a fondness for a certain toad. And he introduces us to the Wind in the Willows. So it's like a live action pan through of a library where you then focus on the book with the toad on it. I like it.
Now, Ryan, actually, I got a question for you. From there, we kind of go to almost a concept art sketch look of the film at large. I was trying to find out if that was just concept art that they used for the film and then just wound up using it for the intro, or did they specifically make that just for that portion?
I think it was just for that portion. I couldn't say for certain, but I think it would just be for that portion, because you kind of get it on the back end when we go to Ichabod, where it's the Headless Horseman, and it kind of goes to a concept piece before they close the book. So I think it was the book ending of that, but I couldn't swear to it.
Okay. So we meet the friends first. You know, we meet Mole and Rat, and they get a letter by Toad, and we go over to meet McBadger, and the first thing I noticed was that there are humans and talking animals, and they all coexist.
Yeah.
And I couldn't think of another film where that recognition happens. I was trying to remember one, but I couldn't think of another one.
I can't.
Yeah, not off the top of my head.
Yeah, off the top of my head, I can't think of anything else.
Maybe Princess and the Frog, like...
But they didn't know what they were... No, that's true. He actually... They did know, because he said... No. Dog is barking, but the animals...
Doesn't she talk to him when he's a frog? Like...
Yeah, well, that's just kind of breaking the rule, actually, because then the dog is barking later, and we can only hear a dog barking, but when we go to the POV of the characters, we hear the dog talking. But
and she's a little shocked with the frog talking, too, so it's not like it's a commonplace...
Yeah, it's definitely not as
because he wasn't actually just a regular frog, either, so that, you know...
What about the alligator?
Well, I don't know. Everyone jumped off that boat.
You know what? I don't think there's any rules in that film, actually.
Yeah.
You know what? I think we just say that. There's...
Okay.
That movie's great, but it absolutely doesn't have a rule on that one.
That was the only one I could think of. Off the top of my head.
Going from Song of the South into this was jarring, because Song of the South was such a strange experience, and then this felt very Disney, and we go into Merrily on Our Way, which I immediately recognize, and I think most Disney fans will recognize, Cyril Proudbottom, the horse. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's voiced by Pat O'Malley, J. Pat O'Malley, who also voiced the Walrus, Tweedledee and Tweedledum, and Mother Oyster, and the Carpenter, all in Alice in Wonderland.
Yes. It's actually
That is correct.
Yeah, he was huge. He was in 101 Dalmatians. He was Colonel Hathi in Jungle Book. He was just around for a while with Disney.
Yeah, and actually, I noticed his voice. He was in the Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious portion of Mary Poppins. He was the one who, you know, talks about his wife.
Yeah, he basically gets hit by his wife.
And now the girl's my wife.
Jesus.
That was wonderful.
That was on point. That was like being there.
Exactly.
That was good.
You're welcome.
I had a note here. Toad is a menace and should be locked up.
Yeah, he kind of is. He really is.
That's what I got from the very beginning of the film. Like, this guy is just a major pain in the ass. And
prison can't hold him.
And it just gets worse.
Yeah, it just gets worse. Like, and now I don't remember as a kid. I really don't have any memory of Toad's Wild Ride.
I don't either.
But I do remember that you go to hell.
Yes.
Yeah.
And did that happen in the books or something? Like, where did that come from? Because I was expecting that to happen in this short. And no one goes to hell, to my great disappointment. So where did the whole Ryan, did that come from the original book? Or was that just something that came up with for the parks?
No, it just came up for the parks. I'm trying to think of... There is a story to that, I feel like, and I cannot remember what it is to save my life.
That is insane. I think that's great. But it's insane. What's up, sweetie?
I do remember the attraction, but only the part where you are supposed to be getting hit by the train, because it was such a great effect when I was little. The light in that dark hallway, like, I legit thought that we were going to get killed by the train.
Yeah. Oh.
That's the only part I remember, though.
And you kept going back there.
Yep.
All right. You need to measure some of your decisions in the future, but... It's good. So yeah, Toad, basically we learn, and he's nuts. He's out of his mind. He's breaking everything.
He has his manias.
Yeah, he has his manias.
Yeah, he really.
Are we supposed to like go deep and say that this is a commentary on, you know, consumerism? I had read a couple of articles that actually they went pretty deep, and I was like, wow, we're going for this, huh?
Yeah, no, I don't.
You don't think so?
No, I think maybe more like an addiction, maybe, because he kind of almost has like a high when he comes across the car, and then, you know, he has to really, like, come down off of that high. So
a motor car.
Yeah, a motor car.
Can I tell you how much I miss? I wish we still called them motor cars, because as soon as I heard that, I thought of Dubliner's track, Johnson's Motor Car. So, Ronnie Drew, what's up? Yeah, I thought this was nuts. I thought this was pretty much nuts. I loved it. I really got into this immediately, where that was a problem last week when we were talking with Song of the South, because as soon as Remus wasn't on screen, my interest level shot through the floor.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
But with this film, I was much more engaged immediately. Ryan, I mean, really quick aside, what are your feelings on Song of the South, just as a film overall, not with the whole side not conversation?
Not getting into all the...
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things, I like that it ties in the whole, you know, live-action animation piece, which Disney had done for, you back to the Alice comedies back in, before, you know, the Disney Brothers Studios. I like that it ties in that piece. I think it's, you know, I think it's one of those great pieces of Disney history, you know, in that it is a representation of the time. It is an accurate representation of what the source material was. But it is, it's a very hard to get into movie because you keep jumping back and forth between basically two stories, and it just gets disjointed to the point where you're like, wait, where am I now?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's pretty much where we all sat with that film, which was a little disappointing because it was definitely the first time I had ever sat down and watched it all the way through.
Yeah, I never had watched it all the way through. That was my first time.
So this was reassuring, honestly. Yeah, like, no. When I started watching this, I don't know why, it felt more comfortable. I immediately was like, all right, we're good.
Yeah,
it
instantly felt Disney.
Yeah, it's back in the comfort zone of Disney. And I just found myself having more fun. Just like, I looked at Mole, and all I kept seeing was Clemenza from The Godfather. Like, and I was like, oh, it's great. It's phenomenal. And then later in the film, he has a shotgun, which is even better. I was like, oh, this is just, everything's working out so well here. But basically, Toad gets a hypno eyes, which I will say right away is a candidate for iconic shot.
Yeah, that is.
Toad hypno eyes has got to be up there, right?
It is.
It's all right.
I don't know if it's my winner, but it's up there for me.
Because that's the poster for the ride.
I believe so. Yeah.
Him with those eyes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, yeah. Behind him, like, you can see all the circles going on behind him, and yeah.
Nuts. So nuts. I love it. So basically, Toad gets arrested after a really strange series of events. We get introduced to the Weasels, who I first knew from Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. As soon as I saw them,
I
thought.
I kind of liked that. It was like, oh, yeah, I remember this very fondly. But what I didn't expect was, or what I guess I did expect, was to hear their voices the way that I remember them in Rabbit. But they're, like, really fleshed out in Roger Rabbit. Here, they're just kind of, I guess, in a feature-length film, they would have been much more
personalized. They would have personalities and stuff. Yeah, they were just, like, they were the lackeys.
They're also insanely violent.
Oh, extremely.
It's great. Yeah. There are so many knives in this movie.
This movie is like a gang flick, basically.
Yeah.
That's what it came down to. It was absolutely like a turf war.
I loved the prosecutor, who is voiced by John McLeish, and it was killing me because I kept hearing the word McLeish.
Oh, yeah. McLean.
And I was like, what? No.
Oh, okay.
McLeish is really strange, but he is Billy Crudup's character in Spotlight. His last name is McLeish.
Okay.
And I kept thinking, I know that name. But he's actually the narrator for Dumbo.
And many of the Goofy shorts.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was a writer on the Rite of Spring segment for Fantasia. So he is kind of everywhere when it comes to talent. I thought that was really, really interesting. So we meet Winky as well, who I did not remember this character at all.
No.
Does he ever pop up in anything else ever in Disney?
I don't remember ever seeing him anywhere.
I would love to see him come back as a villain.
No.
I don't know.
That he wasn't in a scene somewhere in Roger Rabbit, just hanging out in Toontown in a bar somewhere.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I guess he should have been working in the bar where, what's her name worked, where everyone worked.
Yeah.
They should have done something with that, actually. That would have worked out really, that would have fit really well.
Yeah.
And then maybe would have given me more of an impetus to be like, where's this maniac from? Because at first he looks kind of funny, and then as you learn, like, what he is, you're like, nah, it's creepy.
Yeah, he's just pure creepy.
He's insanely creepy with that smile and everything. This is good.
He literally twists his mustache.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a good
while
point.
While the judge is breaking his back trying to shake his hand. I mean, he's...
yeah.
Because he's so honest, so...
So basically, Toad goes to jail, which was pretty dark.
Yeah, it's so sad. They, like, cut to Christmas.
Pretty dark.
And he's alone in the tower. It was
he
so
deserves it, though.
He was just, you know, well, out you, for a joyride.
No, this is what I'm serious. I akin it to. He was a drug addict for the most part.
Yeah.
And he got caught up in something. Yeah.
He was
and
on smack, and he was trying to get his way out of it.
Trying to get his way out of it, and that's what happened.
He's like one of those, like, daredevils who, like, goes base jumping because they like the thrill.
No. Base jumpers don't hit everyone's house on the way down and cause them property damage.
See, I always thought it was like the old money and the kid who had too much money that he didn't even know what to do with, and this is the trouble and the kind of crap he gets himself into.
Oh, that's a good point too. Yeah,
this is the Lex Luthor we deserve.
This is
yeah.
That's it. Get me Snyder on the phone. I have a new angle.
That would have worked.
Oh my God, could you imagine?
That would have worked
if Eisenberg would have played this like Mr. Toad. Like,
oh.
I would have shat with excitement when I watched that film.
That would have been so good. Oh,
I mean, he does ride a motorcycle for like 3 seconds.
He does,
yeah, when he goes back to LexCorp.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I still don't know what his plan was.
I don't know what anything
Do you know,
was.
I've been trying to figure it out for like the last week, and I still don't know what his plan was.
I don't know.
Like, was he trying to kill Superman?
Because
if he was, then he was going to create a monster that no one could kill. So did he want Superman to kill Batman and then Superman to look bad?
Maybe he was just, I'm going to throw all this stuff out there and something sticks.
Get me in a room with Snyder and I just want to ask him questions. And I was just like, he won't be able to, oh God, I just want answers. I want straight answers out of that man. All right, back to the movie. Jesus. Cyril Proudfoot, probably my favorite character in this entire film.
That's what I wanted to say, too. He was the best.
Absolutely love him.
I loved him.
Anything in drag to me is instantly funny. I just love it.
Well, he was the best part of the court scene to me, too, when he was telling the story.
And, of course, you know, he has a little outfit for Toad. And Toad, again, he broke out. And I'm like, what a piece of garbage this guy is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, he really did deserve some jail time. I know I'm supposed to be rooting for him, and I, you know, eventually I do, but kind of.
What I want to know is, how did he get past the guards? If he's clearly supposed to be dressed like Cyril getting out of there, there's a little discrepancy here that someone missed.
Yeah. There's also a horse who's walking around. I want this whole movie from the POV of a human being and them to just be terrified that animals are taking over everything.
Well, they're fine with it because when the policeman sees Toad in the dress, he says, you know, have a good night, ma'am.
It's the worst plan of all time. Where does Cyril go?
Yeah, right.
He's
where
in
does
the tower somewhere?
That's right. That's what I thought. I'm like, did he just leave him?
Maybe he switched places with Mr. Toad, and he's gonna.
So I don't want that. I don't want Cyril in jail.
I don't know.
Oh, all right. So
couldn't he have just gotten out and he could have rode Cyril out of there?
I get.
Would have made a lot more sense.
Would have made more sense.
I guess
right?
They would have moved faster.
Yeah, they would move because
they certainly weren't going to get around like the 8,000 policemen that answered the call. I really loved this movie. This is great. I had so much fun with this one, which was a nice relief. So now we get a train chase scene, in which, of course, I see a train. I'm in a Disney film. I think of Walt. And then I thought of this. Toad feels like Walt in some ways. Jumping at all this new technology without a regard for finances as like his confidant, i.e. Roy, is sitting at home like fretting over every penny.
Yeah.
So Toad is partially Walt, possibly.
Yeah. And Badger is Roy.
Yeah, and Badger's Roy.
Yeah.
And then Clemenza's, I don't know, Clemenza's Marty Sklar.
Yeah.
Great. Clemenza's like Marty Sklar. And we'll say Baxter is Rat.
Sure.
Is that too early, though, for that's way too early for Baxter.
We'll say Ubi works. We'll say
yeah.
Ubi works.
Okay, great. Perfect. He actually, didn't he have a handlebar mustache also? I believe he did.
Yeah.
It's mustache. All coming together.
If not, in our minds, he did.
What? Oh, no, he has that little mustache, doesn't he?
Little mustache.
Yeah, there's a certain term for that mustache where we won't say it. Okay.
No, it was parted.
It wasn't?
It
okay.
Wasn't
it was an outside Hitler mustache?
It was
out the lines?
It was just little.
Okay. So we have a chase scene. A couple of uses of repeated shots, which Melissa actually picked up on.
Yeah, but I felt like it was kind of like how you were saying this is a fun you know, a little short. It would be like if we were watching like a Bugs Bunny cartoon and they repeated shots, what they did all the time. So it didn't bother me. It was only like twice, but
yeah, it didn't bother me.
I noticed it.
Real downer though for bringing it up.
Yeah, thanks.
Yay me.
Yeah, you.
And those guns had lots of bullets.
Yes, that's what I said. They were shooting at him, around him.
And they never stopped to reload ever.
Nope. They were actively trying to kill this man.
Yes.
Like, there was no in-between. It was like, you escaped. Murder is the answer.
That's a done deal.
That's it. That's like, that was in the thing that you signed on the way in the door in.
Yeah.
I really wish that Disney would relax and do stuff like this again, because actually, I will say Zootopia, they seem to loosen the neck on trying some, I don't want to say chancy, but, you know, a little more Hot Topic button kind of stuff. Granted, this isn't Hot Topic, but if it was, it would have, like, leather, and it wouldn't really help you when you want to get rung up. But that's a Hot Topic joke, Brian. Were you not? All right? There's actually a song I heard today called Hot Topic Girl.
Really?
Yeah, and it's all about like how the woman behind the counter is not ringing him up. It was the entire song. It was actually kind of spot on also.
Yeah.
Melissa, you want to say something?
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, in this vein, I would say the new Mickey shorts are kind of similar to this, where they're, you know,
okay,
loose animation and like, you know,
some Ren and Stimpy esque,
yeah, it destroys the whole town and it's fine.
Oh, and of course, half people hate it.
Yeah.
Oh, what a shock! Yeah. Shocking. Thanks, people. This is why we don't have nice things, by the way. Everyone out there who complains about those are really fun. Actually, I didn't like them that much in the beginning. They've grown on me. I think they've gotten better.
Yeah, I like them.
Ryan, what's your feeling on those? What's your feeling on the new Mickey animation cartoons?
I was in the same boat. Like when they first came out, I was like, what is this? You've screwed up every cartoon I've ever loved as Mickey. And they've now gotten to the point where I'm like, okay, now I can start to see this. I think if I, you know, it's a shifting of perspective kind of piece. Like, okay, this isn't the animation style I know and love, but there's still a story here that I can get behind.
Yeah. I'm still not a huge fan of like Hobo Goofy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like when Hobo Goofy shows up, I was like, ugh, that's a little... I don't like that.
Yeah, that's a little out of place.
But it does make sense, because really, who would hire him to do anything?
True.
You know?
Yeah.
He's not good at any job.
Yeah.
We've seen him hundreds of times try to do things. He's pretty useless,
yeah,
actually.
He's bad.
You know what? Forget it. He should be a hobo. All right. Goofy's a hobo. Moving on. So, where are we? So, this was interesting. So, Toad gets sunk to the bottom of the river.
He throws himself off the train.
Yeah, not a great, again, not really thinking.
He didn't think that through. He doesn't think many things through. He's very impulsive.
Yeah, he's very impulsive. I noticed that his hands, when they were grasping out of the water, incredibly human looking.
Yeah, I noticed that. It was like a little child
kind of eerie. Yeah. I thought it looked really eerie, but I liked it.
And then they just pan off of them, and you're like, just forget about that for now.
Yeah, see, this was the thing. I was like, wow, they kill him. Yeah. I'm like, oh, this is when he goes to hell. This is exactly what I was thinking when I was watching this. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, he's going to drown. He's going to go to hell. But then we see Ratty and Mole, and they're just like eating dinner. And then he's just at the door.
Yeah, somehow he got to the front door. Whatever.
Okay.
Cyril came back and helped him.
I'm not going to worry about a plot hole in this film. But I'm really curious as to what happened in the interim of I'm reaching for this branch and dying to, I'm out.
Well, and then even from there, he loses the ball. He had the ball and chain when he shows up, and then he loses it. I'm fairly certain Ratty and Mole didn't have a pair of, you know,
cutters
that were going to get through that.
Yeah, I noticed that too. I was like, all right, he lost it, I guess, somewhere around. You know what? Whatever.
It was one of those cartoon things where he figures out, oh, I can just, you know, move my foot.
They
like
used
this,
peanut butter, a lot of peanut butter. And,
oh, that would have been great if he would.
It's all the director's cut. It's fine.
Yeah, it's a director's cut.
There is a Dune. Length version of Mr. Toad.
Oh my god.
It's 5 hours long and it's all about spice. Man, no one's gonna get that reference.
No. Other show that would kill.
Yeah, the other show that'd be fine. This is empty. So, this was, again, my favorite thing was Mole had a shotgun when they get into the boat and they start. So basically, okay. So Toad escapes the police and we learn that he is innocent, which we all knew, but his friends kind of lost a little bit of faith in them. In him.
Yeah.
And he proves it by saying, you know, we just got to go get the deed. You know, if we get the deed, I'm still trying to find out the legality of this. But if we get the deed, it will prove that I really sold it to them. I didn't steal anything. And we'll be fine.
Yeah, because we kind of bypassed over all this story. what happened was Toad said he sold the car to the Weasels in he traded it for Toad Hall, his mansion. And Winky the bartender said, nope, no, you didn't do that. And then it turns out McBadger in this scene says, yeah, I saw Winky with the deed. You were right, Toad. So we have to go get the deed back from him, show it to the judge, and basically you'll be exonerated.
So even though you broke out of jail.
See, this is what I'm talking about. Because,
it's like, still possession of stolen property.
He's not innocent. He's just not guilty of one of the crimes.
Yeah.
So, like, and this scene, when he answers the door and they save him and stuff, from out of the water he comes, and it's so, Mr. Mole looks so upset with himself, and I'm just like, no, your friend's really kind of an ass.
Yeah.
Like, it's really not all on your shoulders, Clemenza. It's okay.
That poor Mole.
He looks so cute. His animation reminded me of another character, and I can't think of it for the life.
You couldn't
know
that.
Yeah,
down.
You know, I had the same feeling, and really? I just cannot remember exactly what he reminded me of, or from something else.
I want to say it's like a mix of Pooh and Piglet kind of thing, with that very sweet little face, but I don't know.
I remember you said that a couple of times. I got nothing. I did enjoy seeing now, okay, so now we're going to get the deed from the Weasels, who are now living in Toad Hall.
Yes.
And we see the deed, and all I could think of is the Adventures of Winnie the Pooh attraction.
Oh, yeah.
Because of that, there's the picture on, what is it? It's on the ground, right, Ryan?
Yeah, it's on the ground on the right side when you go into Owl's house.
And it's a Toad giving it to Owl. He's actually giving that deed over to Owl.
Yep.
Right.
And then I assume stole something from Owl, got three people killed, and is...
Well, that's the reason. I mean, in the ride, Owl's house is crashing down. I'm assuming Toad did that.
Oh, yeah, yes. That's actually, yeah. Why not? That's good. Yeah.
His airplane.
I'll go with that. So now we're going to get the deed. So we go get the deed. A lot of running gags in this. A lot of, just chasing after the deed. Yeah. They had the rotating door gag that reminded me of Last Crusade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of what reminded me of that. And 1,000 knives.
So many knives. It was like a Cutco factory in Toad's house.
I was thinking of the old 80s video games where everyone just threw knives at each other, like Double Dragon.
Oh, yeah.
And all you would do is lose a little bit of health.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. And then you eat a pizza or whatever and you're fine. That was what I was thinking.
Apple out of the garbage can.
Apple out of the garbage can, yeah. They killed that woman in Double Dragon. You know that's how the game started, the second one?
Yeah.
Just shoot her.
Yeah.
It's a violent game.
It is.
Imagine this would have started like that. Toad would have just shot somebody. So we have a big, basically high energy fun. I really, really enjoyed this one.
Yeah.
And Toad learns nothing. So
no.
That's a message, I guess. That answers one of our questions.
Yeah, he makes believe he learned something, but then he really doesn't.
He really, really doesn't. So I really enjoyed this. I mean, Ryan, what's your overall view on Mr. Toad?
It's fun, and that's really all I'm asking for. Like, it's one constant. Once you get through the story set up at the beginning, it's all fun. It's chase scene after, ridiculous chase scene, and then the plane crashing into the house. I mean, what's not to like about that?
Yeah. And then I like how a paper plane knocks over a steel statue at the end.
Yeah.
It's just, there's so much crazy crap in this thing. I really, really enjoyed it. So Toad basically finishes up, and then we get the U.S. the U.S. half of this film.
Yeah.
And we hear the Bing Crosby voice come in, all of that. So we go into Washington Irving's Ichabod Crane, and we get the introduction of Ichabod into Sleepy Hollow. And we meet Brom Bones, and me and Melissa noticed something. I have a feeling everyone noticed this. Did the scene of somebody walking with a book in their face while a burly man has a thing to do about it, and then the townspeople are singing about this person, strike any bells?
Yeah, just I don't think a goat bit any pages off of the book.
Yeah.
That was the only difference.
So this was pretty much the opening that they leaned on for Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Brom Bones was – they went back and actually studied the character animation to do Gaston, so –
That's why great. I liked him so much.
I knew I liked him for a reason. You know what? Brom Bones, maybe not the bad guy in this.
No, I don't really think. Not at all, actually. He's really not. No. He's not.
This was not expected.
No, me neither. I did not remember this part of it at all.
This was a really interesting non-Disney story, the way that it ends, the way that it's brought about and all that. I love that there are no voice actors, except for the women, on the singing parts, except for Crosby. He fully narrates it.
Yep.
And I thought that was really, really cool and very specific. Ryan, how much, I mean, this is like Bing, this is Bing Crosby at his height.
Yeah, this is, they knew who they were getting for this. And that was one of the reasons, actually, even the story of the Headless Horseman was supposed to be Thurl Ravenscroft. They actually had him recorded. You can hear it on all the CDs, all the, you know, and everything now. But he was supposed to do that song, and they realized, no, we have Bing Crosby at his peak of knowledge. We're just going to let him do the whole thing.
Yeah, I thought that was a really cool move.
Yeah, I really liked that.
And I was also, being one who only knows of the Headless Horseman song by Thurl Ravenscroft, by the way, greatest name of all time.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting to hear Crosby. Well, I mean, I guess as I was watching it, I was like, well, Crosby must sing it in this one.
Yeah, I assumed he was
coming. But in my head, it was always the Ravenscroft version. So hearing this version was very interesting because it's still foreboding, but it's got a little more bounce to it, you know, a little more of that Crosby bounce to it, but it still works.
I like in the part of the song in the beginning where they're talking about the, what does he say? Some don't wear their skin and some, you know, and that man who says it reminded me of the caretaker from Beauty and the Beast, the bald old crazy guy.
Yeah, during the actual whole musical for Headless Horseman piece, that he absolutely looked like the caretaker from Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
So, Ryan, this wasn't all, I mean, what we're talking about, this was intended by the Sleeping Beauty team, correct? I mean, Beauty and the Beast team, correct?
Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. So, wow, they went all the way back to this.
Why did they choose Ichabod, though? That's such a random, like, pull, I would think, for a Beauty and the Beast tale.
I don't know. You say that, but then it fits perfectly. So
no, it fits. Yeah,
you know, I thought this was, you know, it's an awkward man, but he's a ladies' man, which is kind of cool. He knocks three women out and then eats a salad. You know, he's
constantly hungry.
It's great.
Yeah,
he's constantly hungry. He never gains any weight.
No, he's a vegan.
Terrible. He's not a vegan. He's a turkey.
It was a tofurkey.
Oh God. Ugh. It's like spitting in God's face. It really is. So we meet, Ichabod. He looks awkward, but he's ultra suave. And his nemesis, you could say, is this, you know, the proto Gaston, Brom Bones. And they start to battle for the attraction and the admiration of Katrina Van Tassel. By the way, this is all filled with amazing music. I love the Ichabod song. I love the Katrina song.
Yeah.
And Katrina is the worst person on earth.
Yes.
She is one of the worst people on earth.
Well, her and Ichabod.
Ichabod is worse. You know what? I take that back.
Yeah.
Katrina's the second worst person on earth. Ichabod is the worst because he is daydreaming about her money.
Yeah, that's all he wants is the money and the farm.
I wrote it down. I was like, is he more in love with her or her money? Because I couldn't tell.
Oh, no, it was totally the money. And it was that way, like, all the way through. I have this woman I'm going to go see on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Whatever the meal or the best house was, that's where he was going to go. That's where he wanted.
That's true.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He had the time and wrote
He was making notes.
He was making,
Now, actually, I saw a parallel in this to a Neil Gaiman story and film with them trying to win the affection of this woman in that Stardust. Mm. In the opening of Stardust, you have the two men, but you root for the character in Stardust, I forget what his name is. That's Daredevil, actually, now. Yeah. That's what you call him, too.
Yeah, that's what call I call him Daredevil. And when I go back and watch Boardwalk Empire, I'm like, there's Daredevil.
Yeah, there's Daredevil in a barrel.
Yeah.
it's true. I hated that scene so much. I was so pissed that they... you know what, guys? Spoilers on Boardwalk Empire?
Boardwalk's been over for years.
If you didn't watch it, you're not going to watch it. I was so bummed when they killed off his character, Charlie Cox's character.
I really loved his character.
Yeah, I really liked his character. And they killed him in, like, the worst way possible.
Because
they don't show it to you, and then he's just in a barrel.
Yeah.
So, that sucked.
It did.
Everyone in that show deserved to die, though. Just much like Ichabod Crane did. So, Ichabod's a horrible gold digger.
Oh.
And I immediately couldn't... when that scene happened, when he was dreaming of, like, the wheat turning into money, I was thinking, I'm like, wait, am I supposed to hate this man? I didn't know how to respond to it. Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right, fine. You know what? I'm sure Brom's going to do something awful. And that's going to put me on the side.
He does. He tells him a terribly frightening story.
Tells him a scary story. I also enjoyed seeing a coonskin cap on Brahm. I don't know. Like, when was, Ryan, when did Davy Crockett become like a big Disney? That was like almost a decade later, wasn't it?
It was. It was in the late 50s.
Okay. So this is, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if there's any connection to it or whatever, but it was kind of interesting. You know, I see a coonskin cap in a Disney film and I automatically think of, you know, Davy Crockett.
Yeah.
So that's another film. Never seen. Never saw really? It. No, I never saw it. So we have this whole scene now of the two men battling for Katrina's whatever over at her house. And Ichabod basically almost kills Brahm at every turn.
drops him down a trap door.
Yeah.
Yeah, just whatever he can do.
Smashes his face into a brick house and makes an imprint. I mean, obviously he's got more strength than he shows. I started rooting for Brahm.
Yeah.
What is wrong with me? I actually made a note here. Kind of deserves an ass kicking. That was for Ichabod, not for Brahm.
Yeah, no, he does.
There's not a kind of to that, yeah.
Yeah. Like, Ryan, are you team Brahm or team Ichabod at this point? Like, what are your feelings when you're watching this?
It's, like, he just feels slimy. Like, you want to cheer for Ichabod, but it's like, why?
Yeah, you know what? Slimy's a perfect word. And watching this short brought into focus the way that the character of Ichabod Crane is used in the comic Fables.
Yes.
Which...
100%. Yes.
Okay, if you've ever watched Once Upon a Time... Is that the name of the show?
Yeah, but he's not in that.
Okay. If you ever watched Once Upon a Time... And you ever thought to yourself, I wonder what a good version of this would be. Well, the good version of that is a comic called Fables. It came out way before Once Upon a Time, and it just wrapped up recently, actually.
Yeah.
And it tells the story, you'd let me know when this sounds familiar. It tells the story of a bunch of fables who now live in the real world in a town that's protected by magic, so mundanes, humans, can't just walk into there, and Snow White's in charge. And I mean, it's nuts. Really, they copied over a lot of the ideas from this book, Fables. It's really, you really should read the book. And Ichabod Crane is in it, and he is an absolute piece of trash.
He is slimy.
Book.
He's 100%.
Yeah, he's like, like Ryan, when you said slimy, I was like, oh God, that's exactly what he is.
Yeah.
And I guess that's where Mark Buckingham, is that his name?
Yes.
Yeah, I guess that's where Buckingham got that idea from, really. Like, he did shape it around, you know, the story. I just thought it was something that he kind of threw in himself, but I guess not. So, another thing I thought of while we were watching this was, I feel like I'm walking in Frontierland.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't mind a little more of this story, maybe having a presence.
Yeah.
I don't know what they could do, because Frontierland's so... weird spatially.
It is. It's so limited with the water wet right there and the shops.
I mean, because right now, am I wrong, Ryan, in saying that really the only inclusion of this is the walking of the Headless Horseman that occurs during the Halloween party?
There's that. So one of the shops in Liberty Square has a sign for Ichabod Crane. There's Sleepy Hollow Refreshments, which is based off of Washington Irving's house.
And has
the Headless Horseman on it. And then once upon a time, many moons ago, the carriage house at the Haunted Mansion was a little shop, you could buy the dog leashes with no dog kind of a thing.
I remember that.
We had so many of those.
And it was Ichabod's trick shop or something like that.
Ah, okay.
Oh, okay. Wow. I don't have any memory of that.
No.
I also had that huge gap. I was there in 87 as a kid, and then I didn't go back till late 90s.
Yeah, it was around the same. I was so mid 90s.
I can't imagine how much I missed in between that time. You know, a lot.
You missed
really.
Pretty cool invisible dog leashes.
No, see, that I remember.
I love them.
I also remember buying actual paper treasure maps at Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yep.
There was a whole series of them, and I had them as a kid, and they're gone. I wish I still had them. They even smelled.
They had
moldy ish. Which is perfect for that ride. So
musty.
Okay, so now we're going to cut to, you know, we go to the party. Tassel throws a party that her really rich father, who just wears gold as buttons, throws. And Proto Merriweather shows up. That's all I could think of when I saw her. The short, heavyweight. Like, and then she reminded me, and it looked whatever. She reminded me in her movements of the hippo from Fantasia.
See, to me, she reminded me of the squirrel from Sword in the Stone, who's just like an overly amorous squirrel and wants to, like, you know, kiss the other, you know, Merlin and the Winnie the Squirrel. So like her, like eager, like I want to dance with you, kind of thing, was from that.
Oh, okay.
To me, for whatever reason, it was Sword in the Stone, but the movements are like Mad Madam Mim for some reason.
Yeah. Oh, no, no. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. With like the hands.
Oh, yeah.
With,
yep.
Dress and stuff. Yep.
And then can we say that that's sort of what we get for the non-Jessica Rabbit in Who Framed Roger Rabbit? She always sort of reminded me of Madam Mim. You know, when he turns like, a man! And she like tries to raise... You don't remember this, Melissa?
Yes.
Oh, Melissa's looking at me with just deer eyes right now.
I tend to do that a lot.
I got nothing out of her. Okay, but you remember that, right, Ryan?
I remember that, yeah.
Good, that's all that matters.
Up the upper floor, we're good.
Okay, so we have our big song, basically, the Headless Horseman song. I love this song immensely. It's one of my all-time favorite Disney tracks. It holds up really, really well.
Oh, definitely.
The animation in this is great. Of all the things I didn't remember, I did remember him throwing all that salt onto the egg. Or pepper.
Pepper,
right?
It was like hot.
Absolutely love this sequence. I don't know. Does anyone else, do you have any tidbits you want to throw in on this one?
I loved how much coffee was in the coffee or teapot that Ichabod had, because he was just pouring it the entire time.
Yeah, I did. That was one thing I noticed also. I was like, that's a lot of coffee.
Really noticing some dumb stuff in this.
Well, no, because he was doing it for quite a while.
He was. Yeah. And it didn't burn.
And it was a small carafe, so.
I love how the girl's just laughing at him.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. What an absolute bitch.
Yeah.
She
is. She
kind of.
Well, she's only using him to make Brom mad, so.
I kind of like her.
Yeah.
I was like, you know what? Yeah, fine. Yeah. Good. If you're going to do this, let's go the full Monty.
Yeah.
Then we get our, I guess, our grand finale, and that is the Headless Horseman chasing down Ichabod. But one of the small little details that I really loved was before they were getting chased and the horse is just kind of like dragging his feet, literally, there's a tree of a root of a tree that's on the ground, and he just like hits it in a way, but then like drags his foot over it. It was the smallest, you know, silliest little detail, but I thought it was such an attention to detail. I don't know. I just really loved it. It was a silly little moment, but it made me think of, like, wow, the animator.
It wasn't sloppy.
Thinking about, like, every little movement to make it feel, you know, they're just getting across the character immensely.
Mm-hmm.
This horse, I'm assuming, is an alcoholic.
I guess.
Or whatever.
Narcoleptic. He's something.
Yeah, he's so great.
Yeah.
I'm really big fan of the horse also.
Both the horses
were good in both.
Horses were great in these.
They put
film.
In great performances.
Yeah. They really, really threw it out there. Now, I was looking up a lot of the Mary Blair concept art for this scene in particular. She did a couple of really nice pieces, and one of them you'll see on the site is the art that we're using for this episode, as a matter of fact. Ryan, what did you think of this sequence overall? Was there anything that stuck out to you in particular, or anything in particular that you found, like, looking into it?
I like that they work, you know, for what it is to be a scary scene. That's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to, you know, we all remember it because it terrified us as kids at some point. The gags that they worked in, you know, where he trades horses or, you know, he spins around, is running the wrong way. The gags to me, I'm like, you know, they added the humor into it, which I appreciated.
Yeah, and also it had a lot of, you know, some callbacks to like Snow White.
Yeah, with running through the forest and like the trees turning into ghosts, or even just the thumping of the
cattails.
Yeah.
I think I laughed at that the hardest. So when he goes over to the horse and they just start laughing together, I don't know why, I found that absolutely hysterical. Because I'm assuming the horse has no idea why he's laughing.
He's just laughing.
He's just laughing because just like the downers are really kicking in right now.
Yeah.
Or whatever they gave him before they went out on a ride. I particularly loved the animation on the Headless Horseman, his cape.
Yeah.
It
really stuck out to me. And then I believe his name was Wolfgang Reitherman, was the animation director for the Headless Horseman chase scene. actually, I was trying to find out who specifically drew the Headless Horseman. I'm not sure if it was Milt Call or Ward Kimball, right? Do you know?
I don't know off the top of my head who.
It was hard. It was hard getting those details on this film. Was something we noticed a lot of.
Yeah,
it seemed like they just had lists. I found a lot of lists of the same, yeah. you know, same workers
yeah,
on it.
Yeah.
Like the animation directors are. I mean, this is an all-star lineup. Frank Thomas and Ollie Johnson were the animation directors for Ichabod, and then Milt Call and Ward Kimball did stuff. And same with John Lounsbery. They don't say specifically what they did. Except for Frank Thomas, Ollie Johnson, and Wolfgang Reitherman. That they said specifically. Everyone else, I really couldn't tell you. I wish that I could, but I could not find out much. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of those smaller details readily available on the net and stuff.
No, and I think it's – I don't know if it's one of those things where it was – it's one of those films where so many people rotated on and off that somebody picked up somebody else's piece and kept working on it. I don't know what it is, but yeah, you can't, you know, I mean, even I have this giant encyclopedia of Disney animation and it has nothing in there to help delineate those.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
But that's a great point. That's probably honestly the reason is because yeah. it was people just handing it off.
It was piecemeal.
It was piecemeal, yeah.
It was piecemeal. But with it being piecemeal, okay, it's not, I wouldn't say, you know, it looks as sharp as Fantasia or Pinocchio or something like that, but I think it looks really great for the way in which it was put together. I had read in a couple of things that the Disney artists didn't think that this looked up to snuff for a feature animated film, and that's why they made it, you know, a package film. But particularly the animation on The Horseman, I think, is kind of iconic.
Yeah, I think so. I agree.
Yeah, and actually I was reading how The Horseman and even his horse himself is very, very realistic as opposed to the cartoony feel that you get with Ichabod and Brahm, you know, when they're you could smash them into a wall and it's fine. But with The Horseman, it's very, very realistic. And it's almost like The Horseman, who's supposed to be a mythical, legendary character, is the most realistic and the real people, quote unquote, are more cartoony and unrealistic looking.
It's because it's Christopher Walken.
Yes.
That movie is dumb. And I love it.
I kind of like it.
It's a great dumb. Yeah.
Because that movie is filled with dumb.
Oh, yeah.
But I can watch it because Christopher Walken's one line is, and it's pretty great. Yeah. So, Headless Horseman in what I would, another nomination for iconic shot. As we see him through the bridge,
mm-hmm.
Raises up and throws the pumpkin bomb at Peter Parker. And, you know, we basically cut to black and then we open up and we're given the idea that maybe he died. Maybe Ichabod died.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you're given that little backup of, oh, he left town and, you know, got married to a plump woman who cooks a lot, and they have like 18 kids.
Right, she's a widow, and she needs, and yeah, and he comes in, and she's a great cook, and that's the end of it.
Yeah, yeah, so basically, he's still a scumbag.
Yeah, yeah,
like, yes. That's pretty much what happened.
Yeah. And Katrina gets to marry Brahm,
and they look so happy.
It did not take very long for her to do that.
So I put down here. She's as stuck up as Brahm is. They seem perfect together. And yeah, this is the final episodic. I loved these two things together. I really thought they were good. I mean, stylistically and story-wise, they're not deep.
No,
I read another article by an insane person who was saying how Ichabod was like a statement on Taoism.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's like, man, sometimes.
Sometimes a movie's just a movie.
Yeah. You know, us English majors really have to get into these, you know, research papers, and it's amazing the type of connections you will make.
Yeah, I guess.
When you have to.
Yeah, when you have to.
Sanskrit.
I wrote my thesis majoring on in Sanskrit. Dr. Faustus. I mean, I went deep.
Well, I don't know if you saw the New York Post article for the Batman vs. Superman that it was too deep. It was
what?
The Batman vs. Superman was too deep for Marvel fans. That's why people didn't get it. We'll get into this later. What? We'll get into it tomorrow, actually. I'll pull up the article and yeah. Exactly.
You know what? All right, we've been doing this now for like over a year. Have we ever had as many conversations about anything ever as we have about Batman vs. Superman?
Nope.
And it's not stopping.
It's not. Because it's fascinating, honestly.
It is fascinating.
Because everybody wants to really like it.
We are trying so hard as a collective
union. Yeah, I can't remember a movie that I've tried to like so much.
Tomorrowland.
Yeah. Or the original, the prequels.
Yeah, but that faded away pretty quickly.
Yeah, I do remember at the time being like, yeah, no, they're good. They are.
So overall, Ryan, how do you feel about this film? I mean, is this something that you'll revisit? Is this something that, had you watched it in a long time, or was this the first time you kind of went back to it in a while?
No, it's kind of one of those pieces where I watch Ichabod every Halloween. It's just one of those staples I watch around that time of year. And I just love some of the backgrounds and some of the pieces that are done, like the mapping as you're going into Terrytown and all that. They're just great pieces. So no, I do watch it fairly regularly.
I think this is going to become one that I pop on now because yeah. I really, really had a fun time with it.
Definitely. I had never actually watched – I had seen the Ichabod part, but I've never seen the Mr. Toad part.
Stupid Johnny Depp film. Every time you say Ichabod, I hear Ichabod every time because I just wanted him to talk. And that's all I can get. Oh, God. Stupid
next
movie.
Next week, King Louis. You'll be okay. He'll talk some.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Is that next week?
2 weeks. 15.
2 weeks.
2 weeks, 15. Okay. Yeah.
I can't wait. I'm so excited for that. Oh, man. I mean, I know he doesn't sing, but whatever. He is a 36-foot-tall orangutan. Mm-hmm. Great. Whatever. Fine.
Yeah, it works.
Okay. I have no idea why that's in there, but I'm so ready to watch The Jungle Book. It's incredible.
Yeah.
They've done a really great job promoting it. And at the same time, I feel like I'm still going into that movie relatively blind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though we're all familiar with the story, but
yeah.
I don't know if it's going to be a one-to-one retelling of what we're already familiar with. But, man, I'm looking forward to that. Are you looking forward to that as well, Ry?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things I loved as a kid. And so I'm kind of like, this is going to be a different take. Like, this is a different spin. I'm really intrigued by what they've done.
Yeah, it's really, really exciting because God knows there's some other films coming out this year, Alice, that I just wish, I don't know, I hope it's good, but I just don't have any faith.
I just think it's interesting how the marketing for Jungle Book is so much better than, say, the marketing on Zootopia, because the trailers for Zootopia did not get me interested in it at all, and I loved it, and I'm, like, so into the Jungle Book. Like,
maybe they just, like, how do we market a film that's a commentary on racism in a current-day America?
Yeah.
Like, how do you guys want to do this? Yeah. Like, I don't know, man. Show the sloth. It's like, yep, give that man a raise.
They'll do it.
Yeah, they'll do it. Because, look, kids went.
That's the
incredible thing is, like, we all watched those trailers and we were like, man, this looks boring.
Mm-hmm.
But we were obviously the minority. And I was happy to be wrong about what I thought that movie was going to be. But then when I watched it, I was like, how do you market this film?
Well, that's I had the same feeling. There's no...
Tomorrowland had the same problem. Like, how do you market Tomorrowland?
Yeah, those films are hard to get across in a two-minute spot.
Yeah. It's a strange world. Strange world we live in where foxes and bunnies are friends and...
What about badgers and toads?
It makes more sense to me, actually.
the mailman just delivers mail like it's no big deal. I love that.
I did like going back to Toad really quick. When McBadger went back to the door after being, assaulted by all the humans, which was so weird. I was like, oh, okay. When he answers the door again, he's just looking up and he doesn't notice Ratty and Mole. I was like, this is good. Okay, so you know what? I feel like we already answered our first question that we normally like to throw at these films, but let's go over it anyway. Starting with you, Ryan. Does this film hold up? Can you show this to anybody right now and think that they would enjoy The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad?
Yes. And the argument there is that think of another version of these that people go back to time and again. Every version they've done of Wind in the Willows or of Sleepy Hollow's Tale has kind of fallen at some point. So this is one of those pieces you can take back time and again.
Brian?
Oh, yeah, definitely. 100% I can... See, I could show this to my son right now, and he would love it.
Yeah, and, you think he would?
Yeah, okay. Especially the Mr. Toad part.
Because he's also a massive cocaine addict.
Because
it's good.
Because, yeah,
everyone's got their vices.
He's got a lot of knives, so
he'll really
enjoy that part.
He's a big knife fan.
Big knife fan.
It's good.
But no, I think it really it holds up. That kind of
like that kind of storytelling to me is like classic. That's always going to be that will always hold up. That, you know, the comedy and the I mean, I think the animation was great. I loved it. I know you said that they thought it wasn't well, you know, wasn't
well, they did,
up to their standards.
I mean, remember what they, you know, who they are also.
Of course,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, these are the people who created Fantasia. And when you create Fantasia, that's regardless of whether or not one may find the whole, I love the whole thing, mm-hmm. But whether or not one may find it, blah, 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 the artistry in that film is ridiculous.
Oh, no, it is. But I could see this being a cartoon, you know, now. I definitely could.
Melissa?
No, yeah, same. Gonna, you know, agree with everyone. I think it holds up. I think even seeing it together as an hour movie, it was fine. I didn't feel like it was disjointed. The in-between narration that they had, I thought was great. So yeah, 100%.
You know what I would, just to jump back because I forgot to say, I would love to see a Mr. Toad, like, series. Like, that dude could get on Misadventures all the time.
I did read somewhere that they were thinking of making a film based on the attraction. I don't know.
Oh, so we'd all go to hell in the end.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Get hit by a train.
I'm okay. I'm okay with this, actually.
Yeah.
If it ends with you going to hell, and it's like, to be continued.
Yeah. Maybe.
They freeze Toad in carbonite. Fine. I'd love it. It's like if he becomes a villain, like he's just tired of all the garbage he has to deal with, and then Mole just sells him out.
Yeah.
And then the horse tries to get him.
The horse,
yeah. I just want to know where the horse is. I think this is great. I think you could show this to pretty much anybody. This may be so far of the Disney films that we've watched on this show, the most slapsticky fun that I've had. You know, it had a very Marx Brothers kind of quality in some of the chase sequences.
Definitely.
And I really, really enjoyed it. It did feel kind of Warner Brothers-y.
Mm-hmm. It did, yeah.
In some spots,
it did.
I'm fine with that. I have no issues with that at all.
Yeah, me neither.
I thought the music was great. Basil Rathbone and Bing Crosby are pitch-perfect choices for your narrators. It is kind of cool seeing like a British-US combo film in a way.
Yeah, and I think it was really cool the way they brought the two stories together because they really have nothing in common.
They have nothing in common.
Other than their stories.
And quite honestly, if you were to say, like, pick out two things that would represent, you know, British and... in American literature, you probably wouldn't pick these two.
No.
But I almost feel like the stories have become even more popular based on this film. So this is a weird instance where the film kind of kept the book a little more vital and stuff, I think, in overall eyes. Because it's still something that people refer to today. So
yeah, I mean, that's how I would know him is from these.
Here's a weird question. Is this a film that is trying to elicit an emotional response from you, or does it have a message of morals that it's trying to deliver? This is our second question. Ryan, what do you think about that?
You know, the gut reaction is, oh, it's emotion, especially on Ichabod, where it's terrifying, and the other half where it's funny. But I think it is a moral tale, just in the fact of, you know, here are your vices, how do you control your vices, and, you know, here's what happens if you're, you know, a greedy, sleazy, you know, womanizer.
Someone will throw an exploding pumpkin at your head. No, you know what? Actually, I'm going to agree with that.
Yeah, Ryan put it perfectly, actually. Yeah.
Actually, I kind of think you nailed it. At least, that's what I hope. You know, yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, but which, you would think then, is one of the tales like, Ichabod kind of fails. Ultimately, yeah. I feel like Ichabod fails, even though he finds like a woman. That I felt like that was like a Disney thing. It's like, look, really, we can't kill him, guys. Jesus, yeah. Like he just
it's
like
Bambi's mother. Come
yeah,
on.
It's like he just finds somebody, and they all have turkey together. All right, let's just leave it at that. But Toad kind of has that realization and then shuffles it away immediately.
Yeah,
yeah, he forgets.
But I guess like you could say Ichabod is the worst case scenario of like falling prey to, like, you know, your vices and whatnot, as you're saying. And Toad would be the, well, you know, you can get through with it.
He hasn't hit rock bottom yet.
He hasn't hit rock bottom yet. He's not Tyler Durden it yet, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm scared to see what his rock bottom is because he was in jail for a long time.
He's probably bombing London.
His rock bottom is that ride when he goes to hell.
Yeah, when he goes, yeah, I guess, really.
I guess, right. There you go. Came full circle.
That was it. Walt was like, look. I'm not really happy with what we did with this guy.
Not happy we left him.
He really shouldn't have, you know, flown off into the sunset. We're bringing them to hell, boys.
Yeah.
Where, Walt? Fantasyland. Build it. Shut up. Melissa?
Yeah, nah, actually, I think it's the same thing. It's definitely supposed to teach you a moral, but the characters themselves, I don't think, learn. Toad definitely doesn't learn
great.
Anything.
Show it to your kids.
Yeah. So I don't know how that goes across. But yeah, I think it is trying to teach you, like, if you, you know, give into your vices, things don't go well for you, you can get locked up and you can get a pumpkin thrown at you.
Yeah.
And ran out of town.
Oh my God, I want to throw pumpkins at people. He's so great. All right, third and final question about this film. What is the iconic shot of this film? Like, if you could freeze frame the Blu-ray or DVD, if you're living in the 90s, if you could freeze frame this film, what would be the poster that you would make? Ryan.
It has to, when the headless horseman rears up in the graveyard, sword in one hand, pumpkin in the other over the tombstones. Like, they use it twice, so, and that has to be it.
That's mine as well. I mean, I want to say something with Toad with the hypno eyes.
Yeah.
That would be my close second, but I feel like, yeah. Melissa, do you have a... Oh, I think I sense some... No, you're going to go with us?
No, I picked out two because I thought there were two distinct stories, so I
there,
did
there
out
were.
Two.
There were. There was... The first one
that
was...
That was perceptive, Melissa.
The first one was Mr. Toad.
Yeah.
Second one? Ichabod Crane.
I agree with everyone on the Ichabod with the Headless Horseman. That is, you know, that shot. But actually with the Toad part, I thought of him riding the carriage with Cecil.
Cyril.
Yeah. With Cyril singing the Merrily song.
I love that song.
I love it too.
That's a great track. This movie's really filled with
there was
but yeah, good music in this movie.
Yeah.
That was, yeah, that's a good pick. I'll go with that. That was a fun one. All right. So we got a pair of them though. Well, Melissa anyway. And then, hey, and then, you know, for us, it's the Headless Horseman rearing up, pumpkin about to be thrown at you, ready to murder you. It's a family film.
It's a feel-good family film.
It's a feel-good family film. So that was a very fast hour, actually. I'm going to say that was maybe one of the quickest feeling episodes we ever recorded.
I think that's how the movie felt. Like, it was always like upbeat pace, you know, going. There was no like draggy parts.
Jesus, Song of the South was a downer. Like, the further we get away from it.
It was draggy.
It was really draggy.
Everything.
And now next week we are going to go into one of the seminal classic Disney films with Cinderella. A film that I don't really love. I don't know. I haven't watched it in a while. We do have it. So, you know, we're going to watch it. But it's a film that never really stuck with me. I don't know if I'm the audience for it. But I'm curious to sit down and watch it, you know, for this purpose.
Yeah, me too, because I have not watched it in so long.
Because I remember I had that sort of feeling going into Snow White. I was like, I don't know how I'm going to like this. You know, and then I wound up loving Snow White.
Yeah, you know what? I had that same feeling. I really enjoyed Snow White a lot
more
than I thought I was going to.
I mean, Melissa, are you... I feel like you're not a Cinderella fan.
I like it. I don't like it because of the merchandise that has now gone on with the decision of the color of her dress.
All right, go into it, because that doesn't make sense to anybody who doesn't know what you're talking about.
Because her dress in the movie is like a silvery kind of sparkly color, and it is now blue in the parks. And my favorite princess, Sleeping Beauty, her dress is blue in the movie.
And pink.
99% of the movie, it's blue.
And pink.
Not pink.
You can make it pink, though.
You can, and they have decided to do that in everything, and it annoys me, because my favorite color is blue for that very reason.
Well, if they do make Cinderella blue, they have to make Sleeping Beauty a different color.
I know, but Cinderella's dress was never blue.
Well, it was in the movie now.
No.
In the live action.
In the live action.
The live action.
Yeah.
So you've lost.
No.
You've lost. You've lost that fight.
No.
The last person who agreed with you is, who's the artist? Armani.
And he's Karen
dead.
Hallion.
Karen Hallion. Yeah, okay. Shout out to Karen Hallion.
Yeah.
Ryan of the Main Street Gazette.
And on that note.
Thank you so much for coming on this week. That was a lot of fun. I'm really happy we were finally able to fix up a good time and I think a great movie, actually, to have just a nice, loose, fun discussion about. So I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule. You are the Main Street Gazette. Like, it is you, and you are it, correct?
Yes, it is just me.
That's insane, man.
Yeah, I hear that a lot. It's slowed down over the past couple of years. Like, I've slowed down a little bit, and it's still, yeah.
Look, I'm going to tell you about this story about this toad. He had some vices.
He had a problem?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to thank you so much, man. I really want you to come on again. Actually, I really would like just kind of have like an open door policy, man. Whenever you want to come on, this is what the show is. We don't do the news and whatnot on this show anymore. Or on the very, very rare occasion, sorry, comma, listen now. On the very rare occasion, we might touch on some news, but basically, we're going to be the movie show. So whenever you want to come back, come back.
Definitely. I had a blast.
Come back, Shane. Come back. Should I do outros?
No. Yes.
Yes.
Well, Ryan, where can
I? Oh, yeah. No.
Shut up, Ryan. I'm not through with you yet. Oh, read the reviews.
Oh, shoot. That's right.
Yeah. Professionalism.
I have them.
Oh, Mel's got
them. Oh, you got them?
Yeah. I did.
Read them.
She's
okay.
Better than me.
Ask Christopher Walken. A female Christopher Walken.
I cannot do that. We have great source of Disney info from DFox218. He
says, what that is.
I have no idea. Always great to listen to the show for information. The group is highly informative and very helpful in all things Disney. Huzzah.
All right. Actually, I do want to read the other one in the... Let's try to do a Walken voice. Mickey Mouse approved by AJ Claudio. Love the show and the entire crew. They're so relatable in their conversations. It's almost like they're my family. Keep it up. There we go.
Very nice.
Oh, good. Nice.
Huzzah.
That was good.
Not bad. Ryan, where can everyone find you on the net and on the Twitter and everywhere else where they can find you on the social media? Wherever?
Make it real simple. Main ST Gazette. That's the website. That's the Instagram. That's the Twitter.
That is so well thought out.
I love your Instagram.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love your Instagram. Go ahead, Melissa.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, I love the Instagram.
I love you.
She wanted
to make sure that you knew it was her that loves us.
All the hearts are mine.
I'm going to have links to your site and to your Twitter, and I'll throw in the Instagram link as well. On the show notes page, it's not really a show notes page; it's a web page of which I babble about the movie for a little bit and then tell everyone what's going on. So, one more time, thank you so much for coming on with us, and we will definitely have you on as long as you want to return to this insane asylum. So right now, you are listening, the listener, are listening to What I Likes by Pogo. You can find this video and more over at youtube.com/Pogo, his music at soundcloud.com/Pogo Mix, and his website is pogomix.net. We are Last Gen Podcast. Find us on the web at lastgenpodcast.com, where you will find four, count them four, portals to all of our different shows. And that would be the Film Basement. Don't go in there unless you're okay with language. I'm telling you right now. And then everything else is fine. Then you got Disney Magic Hour. Then you have Unleash the Magic with Maria Riboli and Tom Burka. And that is where you'll get your Disney news and your park suggestions and stuff like that. And then also
The Stage Door Podcast.
The Stage Door Podcast, which is kind of about the business of show business. What not to do on... Oh, why am I blanking?
Like auditions.
Yes, like this week's episode is what not to do in an audition. I think it's a really great... If you're a young actor, you should absolutely... Or if you're just interested in the act of acting and all that, check out the episode. I think it's really, really great. They're starting to really hit a stride over there. So head over to there and take a look. And you can find us on Twitter at Diz Magic Hour Pod. That is D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. And then you can find us on Facebook if you search for Disney Magic Hour. And you'll find our little group there. And a lot of good conversations, a lot of fun going on over there. It's just as silly as this. And then, of course, if you head on over to iTunes and give a 5-star review and hit that subscribe button, a thank you. And we will read your review on the air in maybe one of the two voices that I can impersonate. Say goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Melissa.
Say goodnight, Brian.
Goodnight, Brian.
Say goodnight, Ryan.
Goodnight, Ryan.
Goodnight, Pete. Say goodnight, Pogo.
I does what I like, and I like what I do. I does what I like, and I like. I does what I like, and I like what I do. I does what I like, and I like. We'll be right back.
Now how does that sound?